Good morning, everyone. Today I'll be talking about protecting confidential data on personal computers with storage capsules. This is a joint work with Kevin Borders, Eric Vanderwill, myself, and Atul Prakash. Today we face the continuous threat of malware that invades our computer systems despite many efforts taken in the past. The fact that computer users store all sorts of data on their computers has become the motivation of many attackers to write malwares to steal such data. The primary type of data that we're concerned here today are the sensitive data. Examples of these include credit card and social security number, academic records, business contracts, and financial statements. Microsoft Security Intelligence Report Volume 5 shows that this is not a small problem. More than 23 million computers have been cleansed in the year 2008. So based on this, systems designers now will have to work under the assumption of a compromised environment or operating systems to protect data. Unfortunately, the consequences of such information leak problem are severe. They include financial loss, identity theft, and or fraud. These are some examples of scenarios that motivates for a new solution to the problem of information leakage. This by no means is an exhaustive list, but I shall expound on the first example later. They include performing financial analysis of credit card expenditure, writing journal that contains controversial political beliefs, or writing business proposal. So as you can see on the screen right now is an example of a spreadsheet that you may edit. During the editing process, you may store sensitive information, such as your credit card or bank login credentials. This information, definitely, you would not want them to be leaked out. As a more tech-savvy user, you can take further precautions, such as using TrueCrypt to further encrypt your data. Now, the problem with this is that, is this solution truly safe enough? While TrueCrypt may protect your data when the document is closed, while your document is open, it is out in the clear, and malware could definitely leak it out anytime. Therefore, we can see that the goal of any solution now would be to provide confidentiality protection for local sensitive files against the impact of malicious software. This includes the whole duration that the file will be resident on the system, be it open or closed. As we can see from the flowchart to the right, a computer that is plugged onto the internet may be infested by malware. But we should prevent the malware from leaking these sensitive files back to the internet by providing some sort of protection. Now we shall look at current solutions today that attempt to achieve the same goal mentioned earlier. One of the related work is Trusted Boot. In order for Trusted Boot to work, software verification is crucial and required for all software before they are installed onto a system. And the process of verification itself is hard, as we all know, and expensive. And as you can see in the picture, we can do verifications at a BIOS level, boot level, even the kernel, and maybe the applications. But we cannot really verify documents because they are bound to inputs and changes, and therefore can be used by malware to subvert the application and leak data during runtime. For example, macros contained in Word or Excel documents can be manipulated to do so. On the other hand, we have another approach that provides better safety guarantees, that is a strict inter-process flow control. In order to prevent information leakage, we must first have a mandatory access control, I call it the A, which only allows input from the internet. You can imagine a mandatory access control that only allows your data editing software to download maybe email attachments and do nothing else. Then you will need to have a separate mandatory access control B, which will only allow output to the internet. For example, this Mac will only allow your email client to send email and nothing else. However, as we can see, the usability of our program is then greatly limited. We also have the air gap approach, where we electronically and physically disconnect the system from the world. Using air gap, our applications can neither download nor upload anything to the internet. Again, as you can see, the problem here is that utility becomes extremely limited. To address these problems, therefore, we propose a solution called storage capsules, which can solve the problem of information leakage mentioned earlier. The contribution of our work is that it's a system that can securely access confidential information from a compromised commodity operating system. Capsule allows normal operating systems and standard applications to access sensitive data. Generally, we have two modes of operation. As seen on the left is a normal mode where we do our normal operations, where there is no restrictions whatsoever. We could perform non-sensitive operations, such as listening to music, stream from movies from the internet, browse the internet, or just doing some editing normal documents. And usually, there are no storage protections provided. And in secure mode, we prevent network output. And this is where we can edit sensitive documents. Then these changes made to these documents will be encrypted to storage capsules. Now, since usability is also our concern, we model our workflow similar to that of a current popular encryption software, that is TrueCrypt. But the trick is that capsules provide greater safety guarantee to the content of the data, even when it is open. I now present to you the architecture of storage capsules. Let's start from the top right, where the red box is. This is a primary VM, where it is analogous to our current workstation, no changes, which runs standard applications such as Word, Excel, PowerPoint, or any application you want, and is connected to the internet. It is in red because we do not trust this part of the system because malware could have infected our system. Then we have our capsule viewer, which is one of the in blue. The components in blue are basically capsule components, which are the part of the work that we do. And capsule viewer is just like a program installed on a primary VM, which is used to interact with capsule server. Capsule server lives in the capsule VM. And this capsule VM is is part of our trusted computing base. Capsule server runs trusted application for interfacing with the primary VM and also the VMM. Then later on, it is also responsible for the encryption of our data. Then moving down, we have the capsule VMM module. This is also part of our trusted component, and it's responsible for managing snapshots and mediating device I/O. Now we address the threat models of our work. We basically trust the user because in the sense that users should know what they are doing since they are taking steps to protect their data using various means. We also trust our capsule virtual machine and the VMM because basically these are a smaller piece of data, hence there's less attack surface. We basically do not trust the primary operating systems and applications because they can be subverted or infested by malware. We also address covert channels. Covert channels within the primary VM are basically blocked, and channels in the capsule VM, VMM, and hardware may not be fully blocked. Now that you have seen the design and architecture of capsules, I'll show you what happens within capsule module when we want to securely edit a document. I shall begin with the process of opening a storage capsule. First, a user will initiate an open operation through the capsule viewer, which will then be forwarded by the viewer to the capsule server. Now, the server will be ready to accept a key escape sequence from the user. And the reason we use a key escape sequence is to prevent malware from spoofing the open store command. We simply place the responsibility at the user because the user should know when they want to transition to the secure mode. Now, if a key escape sequence is receive in the blue, then we will the server will issue some warnings to the user, and the user should heed the warning. Now, upon receiving that, the server will issue disable output and save snapshot command to the VMM module. After output has been disabled and snapshot being saved, we are now officially in safe mode. Now that we are in safe mode, user can then enter the decryption password for the particular storage capsule, and then user is ready to edit the document using their favorite editors. And these read and write operations will be relayed by the capsule's viewer to the capsule server. Upon finishing your work, again, a user will initiate the closed store by issuing another key escape sequence. Now, the reason we use another key escape sequence here is that to prevent malware from manipulating timing channels. Imagine if malware can transition out back to normal mode at any time. This information can be used to leak data. Now the capsule server, after that, will send reverse snapshot and enable output to the VMM module. After snapshot has been reverted and output re-enabled, we are back to normal mode. Then you can resume your normal activities. Having seen the architecture of storage capsules, I would like to show you an illustration of covert channels which are possible that some covert channels that we have analyzed as potential problem. But this does not represent all the covert channels possible, and we have tried to address them as appropriately. The main goal of malware in our system would be to leak out information during secure mode and store this somewhere and then reaccess them after transition back to normal mode, because if the snapshot is reverted, then all changes are lost in the primary VM. So possible covert channels are in the capsule server and the operating systems in the capsule VM. And at the VMM side, it could be the virtual machine monitors, operating systems, and even at the hardware layer. We shall go into each of these in greater detail. First, let's look at the primary operating systems and capsules. They could be manipulated to leak information. So we fixed file source size to prevent this. You could imagine that malware could pad the file during secure mode, and then after that, you can check whether or not the padding is there. Then this could leak a bit of extra information. We also re-encrypt the storage before every export. This is to prevent malware from deliberately manipulating file blocks to modify, and these changes could be detected after even after encryption. Therefore, we re-encrypt the entire storage. And as mentioned earlier, the user controls the transition timing with a secure key escape sequence. Now I will address external devices such as floppy drive, CD-ROM, USB, SCSI, and a lot more. One good example of how malware could leak information is on your CD-ROM drive. You may think that if we only enable write, then malware could not leak data. But malware could actually, say, eject the CD-ROM drive to leak a bit of 1 and not eject the drive to leak a bit of 0. And this can be detected after the transition to normal mode. Therefore, to address this, we disable all device outputs during secure mode. At a VMM level, memory utilization can be manipulated to leak data. For example, malware could set, let's say, 80% of the memory pages to have the same content. Due to optimizations done by the VMM, these pages will be mapped to the same physical page, and therefore, during restoration process, you incur more page faults. And if this is detectable, then you can leak information. We address this by not overcommitting memory and uses a fixed memory layout. The other place where information can be stored is a virtual network. For example, malware can initiate a lot of TCP connections to the capsule virtual machine. Then, after transitioning back to normal mode, malware can look for respond packets. Therefore, we mediate this by simply restarting the virtual network during transition back to normal mode. Then, in the hardware, we could imagine the CPU or disk cache as storage channels. As for CPU, the cache or the branch prediction table can be used to leak some as a storage channel to leak some information. Then this can be obfuscated by using restoration code, which will add noise to the CPU. To fully mediate this, we'll have to do a full reset of the CPU. And as for disk cache, we could imagine malware warming up the disk cache with reads during secure mode. Then when it transitioned back, you could check whether reads were done. So to mediate this, we will need to clear all disk caches or move all files to block these covert channels. Another attack which is possible on our systems is the secure mode forgery. Having known how capsules work, malware could maybe fake the secure mode UI to trick user into entering their decryption password or so. However, to be safe, user should know what they are doing, and they are only required to remember that they're supposed to enter a key escape sequence to enter secure mode and from no other means. They should heed warnings that are issued by the system. Since we care about the usability of our system, we have evaluated the performance of our system when it is transitioning to secure mode, then back from secure mode to normal mode, and the performance in secure mode itself. So let's start with the performance number for transition to secure mode. On the very left is the figure we'll see for transition to secure mode with background snapshot. And on the right is the one without background snapshot. We should note that even with background snapshot enabled, we cannot transition out back to normal mode until the snapshot is actually done. Therefore, the duration of wait is as long as the transition to secure mode without background snapshots. On the right, we can see the times for transitioning back to normal mode from secure mode. Basically, transition back to normal mode is more expensive because VMware uses a copy and read for background restore. Presumably, during restoration, memory read are more prevalent than memory writes. And the reason that we see a non-linear sort of restoration time is simply a strategy that VMware uses. Now we have also evaluated our systems in secure mode using an Apache benchmark, which reflects probably the worst use case. It is worth noting that Apache build is not a typical use case. Compared to a native systems, storage capsules is 38% slower. However, most of this overhead are due to the virtualization and encryption. We prove this by evaluating our system against running TrueCrypt in virtual machines, and we show that it is only 5.1% slower than running TrueCrypt in VM. This overhead is barely noticeable for normal use of capsules such as editing secure document, which is definitely not as heavy as a web server build. So now I shall proceed with addressing some limitations of our work. Unfortunately, changes made outside capsules during secure mode will be lost. For example, background computations, you'll be lost because due to the snapshots. then since we prevent network output and all possible outputs during secure mode, network connections will also be lost. Processes such as download services will then be interrupted. Another limitation of our system is that short-lived sessions are impractical due to transition time. As mentioned earlier in the performance slide, we need to wait for at least 2 minutes before we can transition between transition between modes. This is due to the current way we implement things. In conclusion, we have introduced storage capsules, a new mechanism for securing files on personal systems, which is similar to existing file encryption software, which means that the usability issue is being dealt with, but we provide better protection and usability. Our system works in the face of a compromised operating systems. We have also explored covert channels on many layers and also from many new perspectives in our work. Therefore, I'll now open the ground for questions.
Please use the microphones and state your name and affiliation.
Paul Van Orschot to Carleton University. Your last slide, you do claim better usability. So I wanted to know on what basis you came to that conclusion.
I see. So our point is that we assume that user is familiar with available encryption software such as TrueCrypt, and we model our workflow very similar to TrueCrypt. Therefore, we do not impose extra restrictions to user than what is there out there now.
Right. I mean, there were only a couple of little escape sequences and some other things, but in drawing a conclusion of better usability, shouldn't you involve some user testing?
I agree that further user testing would further enhance the point, but our take is that since we model after something that is familiar, then we assume that usability would not be too much of an issue.
Right, but I don't think you can make that claim unless you actually do something to verify it.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
We can't hear you. Maybe use the microphone in the front.
My name is Pierluigi Zeccone, Telecom Italia. Once you don't trust the primary operating system, how can you trust your viewer, which is running on that operating system, the machine?
Oh, I see. So basically, the capsule viewer is part of just. Okay, so let's start with. What a viewer does. The viewer simply provides the interaction channel between the primary virtual machine with the capsule server. So what it does is just issue store or open commands. Or maybe if you can illustrate a way that the viewer can be compromised to achieve some goals, then because let's say if viewer issues an open, but if the user does not enter key escape sequence, then it's not going to work.
The viewer is supposed to be trusted.
The viewer is inside of the red box. It's not trusted. If the capsule server treats the viewer as a potentially malicious client, so it doesn't have to be trusted. If it's been compromised, all it can do is deny all the service. It can't get data leaked out of secure mode, so it's not trusted by the server.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kevin Butler. I just have a quick question about the... you say that the to go into secure mode takes, you know, a couple of minutes, and to come out of secure mode takes a couple of minutes, and none of my background stuff can run. So what are the advantages to me of doing this versus just rebooting and into a different partition on my drive, where the boot up time will probably be faster than using this?
Sorry, what is the advantage compared to?
To just rebooting my machine, since, you know, none of these services in the background are going to be usable to me anyway, and just booting, you know, just dual booting my drive into a different partition, since I'm already more or less air gapped with this capsule VM.
I guess I don't quite get your question.
So, can you go to the performance slide? Well, basically, the time on the left is only 5 seconds, and the time on the right to go back for the middle case is 20 seconds, for the gigabyte is 60 seconds, which is much less than the time. Bad times are only if you want to switch back right away, that's much time you have to wait. But if you're just editing your documents 2 minutes anyway, then you don't see that time.
All right, thanks.
Transitioning in is much faster.
Charles Antonelli, University of Michigan. So this is a very interesting idea, and I'd like to run it on my own machine, but that's another story. It seems to me that the challenge here is in closing the covert channels. So in your paper, you talk about a lot of the covert channels. Which of those have you actually closed? And are you, thinking down the road of getting the last one out of there?
A last what?
Eliminating the last covert channel.
I see. So our work try to address as many covert channels as we think there is, but definitely not all of them. We can only address covert channels which are presented to as much as for the abstractions that is presented to us. So.
And is this available now? Is this work available now?
We currently have a prototype of this work, but I don't think it's open yet.
I have a quick question. You speak about covert channel. Now you have two VM, and the design of two VM is to be isolated, and you have like a communication between the two. What about exploit, buffer overflow, format string bug, and stuff like that? How do you protect your server?
So, I guess at which level of buffer overflow are you talking about? Like, because we generally do not trust the primary OS, right? So you could have all the buffer overflows or infected by malware. But the goal of our work is to protect the data from being leaked out. So,
well, you have a server in the second VM, right? If we look at your diagram.
Okay, so.
And you have a communication between the two, meaning you have communication of data from one VM to the other. If there is a exploit in your own code, do you have SISLR, non-executable stack?
Yeah, so it is possible if there is vulnerabilities in our code, but since our code base is small, and let's say if you were to do verification of our code, then it would be easier job.
Did you look at your code for that?
We have not done formal verification.
No. Code audit. Like, do you have any protection against buffer overflow, format string bug, stuff like that?
Oh. It's in Python.
Right now, but I think your point is valid, that there could be potentially bugs on the server side which could down the road compromise. But we are using a safe language and trying to do our best in terms of protecting the server. So it's not like the buffer overflow which is there, but unless there's any problem with the underlying Python interpreter. There could be other things, and I don't think you're not claiming that they're all good up, but we are claiming that if it's trusted and if it's done right from a conceptual point of view, it does provide the guarantees that.
Yeah, Rolf, switch over.
All right, let's thank the speaker. And
thank you.